Call the construction committee meeting to order, please. Let's have a roll call.
Right. Let's see how you know.
Director Wizar.
What's like what Subway?
Director Wilson.
Here.
Eric Kanabi.
Here.
Director Miles.
We have a quorum. Quorum's present. Love it when a plan comes together.
Okay.
All right, sir. How are you?
Yeah. Okay. I'm ready to go.
It's junked item 29. Do you have any comments, Mike? Okay.
Go ahead. Did you want to start with 29, Chairman?
No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what?
Well, let's see if it's on here.
I mess you up. Save the reports till the end.
Hmm? What was that?
Okay, I just want to give a quick update on the I-5 South project.
Okay.
And before I get started, I'd just like to say that Caltrans currently has about 683 projects ongoing statewide, and the value of that is about $10 billion. And then also Caltrans in L.A. and Ventura, we have about 111 projects ongoing right now, and that's valued at $1.43 billion here in the Los Angeles area, and it's approximately 16% of the statewide total. So we're real busy with construction, and if you go out and drive, you probably have a difficult time driving on any freeway without hitting some type of construction. So with that, I'll move on to the I-5 South project and give you a quick update. Currently, we have... As you can see, here's an overall schedule, and we do have a commitment to meet our CIMA funding commitment, and we have about 9 pieces of property that were still critical path, and those are commercial properties in segments 3 and 4 of the project, and we are working with the owners, and we're getting help from Metro and CTC commissioners and staff on coming up with getting final commitments from those property owners to move forward with the projects. Just an overview. We started with 232 parcels. 203 of them were residential and 17 commercial, and the other ones were government. We don't have any railroads on the segments 3 and 4. Again, we're moving forward with getting our parcels, because really this is really a right-of-way project, because majority of the work involves right-of-way acquisition. So we're really working closely with MTA and others to make sure that we acquire all the right-of-way that we need so that we can get the projects under construction prior to the CMI deadline. And what we're doing, we've worked with FHWA, and we have approval to do what's called workarounds. And basically, we don't have to have full control of the property. We just have to have first written offers to the owners. That will allow us to start construction, and we can work around those properties until we can acquire them. This is on segment 4. Again, you can see from the slide, I don't need to go through it, that we are moving forward with acquiring the properties. We have 187 total, and we've already given appraisals to 176 of them, and we have first written offers 272. So we're moving forward very good. These are relocation assistance program. These are for businesses. On segment 3, we anticipate about 3 relocation assistance for businesses, and on segment 4, 22. So far, we've received no claims for any type of lost business or loss of goodwill.
Segment 4, is that a particular area, or is that everything combined?
That's everything combined through the whole segment.
Is there
four.
A majority of that 22 relocations in one particular area?
Pardon me?
Is Is there a majority of the 22 relocations in a particular area?
The reason that's a predominantly business area, and they're scattered through the entire segment.
The La Mirada area? Or what?
Yes, and Norwalk through that area. And again, in summary, we have 94% of the appraisals and properties complete. We have 91% first offers. We have 60% legal control. We don't have full or zero control of any of the contaminated parcels. We're still working on those. We did have some problems of getting access to a lot of the businesses to test for contamination, because once we test their property and they become aware that there is contamination, then they become partially liable for the cleanup of it. So a lot of the property owners were reluctant to allow us to get onto the property to do that testing. We have gone through the courts now and gotten rights of entry. So we're in the process of testing and doing appraisals on the properties that have contamination on them. And also, we've been working with Metro staff, CTC staff, and Caltrans headquarters to come up with a backup plan B in case we are not able to fully commit the CIMA money on segment four. And part of that plan would be to move the money onto either I-10 or the I-5 North. So we are working with staff to determine which is the best option available, and then we'll be presenting that to Metro staff if need be. So with that, I'll ask if there's any questions.
Any questions? Appreciate the update. I understand that, Mr. Walls. Relax. Do we have a public comment?
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Miles, can you, aside from your report, thanks for your report, last meeting we talked about the green construction policy that the MTA has, and we asked you to look into how that policy is coordinating with the policy that Caltrans has. Have you put something together so that we can take a look at that to make sure that we are actually living up to the spirit of what the board policy was that was adopted on green construction?
I did not put anything specific together on that. I do have the comments are that we follow the AQMD and other guidelines or policies for air quality, and the MTA policy is a little more restrictive than those policies. So we're going to have to work with your staff and Caltrans to figure out how we're going to comply with the Metro's more stringent policy.
Is it possible for you to have your staff put something together and show us the areas where there is a difference between our policy at the MTA and the policy of Caltrans, so we can at least start to address those issues and try to figure out how to work them out? We are getting a lot of concerns from the contractors who are thinking that our policy may be a bit restrictive, and we're also getting concerns from the folks in the environmental community saying that we don't have any teeth to the policy that we've adopted as a board. So it would be helpful for me, and I don't know about the other colleagues on the board, to have something in writing so I can see, well, where do these policies coincide and where are they at odds with each other, and what steps do we need to take to try to live up to the spirit of what this board has adopted as a green construction policy.
Yes, we can put something together, and I'll get it back to you.
I mean, because the most important thing about that as well is not so much differences, but how we work through them quickly so we don't start. I mean, we got some rough projects out there that we don't want to delay. And when we talk about creating jobs and putting people to work, and paperwork analysis can sort of drag things on, too. So it'd be good if you bring it back. Thanks.
Sure.
You know your anticipation when you'll be able to get that back to us?
I'll
next committee meeting?
Pardon me?
Well, can you bring it back to the next committee meeting?
I can try to, yes.
That'll be in January. So.
Yeah, January.
Don't say try. That's next year. You can't do it by next year. I don't know when you can do it.
Okay, we'll have it for the next meeting.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org, or just Google Walsh Confidential. Mr. Miles doesn't do a bad job. His predecessor did a much better job. And wait a second. Toll lanes. Take a look at – I haven't seen this month. I'd like a copy of that report. Last month's report shows the project 2 years behind schedule and $65 million above projected completion. $65 million. In other words, the day you started, you had a budget. Now you project at the end it'll be $65 million. Now you can play all sorts of games because every budget always ends under budget because they're subsequent budgets. But I'm telling you, the LA Times isn't going to go to this story because the mayor has promised Ari Bloomcats a job here the way Steve Hyman got a job here. So he's not going to do anything. But one of these days, we're going to get a story on what a boondoggle the toll lane project is.
Thank you. All right. Before we do any more reports, I'm going to jump to the agenda. And first of all, item number 30. I'll do the reports at the end. I just want to make sure we get the business done before we do the reports in case we have to lose a quorum or anything. So. Okay. Item 30.
Okay. Well, good morning. I'm Dennis Morey. I'm the Executive Officer of Project Management. I'm here today for Krishna Murthy, the Executive Director who's on vacation. So this morning I'll be presenting the items. We have the preparers of the items here to answer questions for you. Item number 30 is the electric vehicle charging station grant, and the action is to authorize the CEO to negotiate and execute CEC grant to deploy electric vehicle chargers at metro sites. So essentially what this item is all about is that we do have a grant, and the grant is available to us to utilize the California Energy Commission grant funds to install plug-in electric vehicles, the PEVs, at charging stations at four metro park and ride stations, and also provide upgrades to the existing PEV charging stations at our Gateway headquarters in Union Station. So this recommendation includes another action, which is to amend the fiscal year 12 budget to add $54,880 to project number 210130, and that's for public plug-in vehicle charging station.
Is that offset by the grant?
Yes, sir.
All right. Are there any questions of staff? If not, the chair would move the recommendation.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any objections? So ordered. Thank you. I would add on item number 32, for those of you that may be here, as I understand, I'll check with Michelle because I don't want people to say it. There are three hard conflicts, so this will have to go to the full board, right, without recommendation?
That's correct.
Item 32 will be going to the full board without a report today. Thank you. Item number 31.
Okay. Item number 31 is for the Metro Red Line Division 20 car cleaning platform and new car wash project. And the action is to approve recommendation to increase the contract modification authority. And this is to go to future contract modifications or change orders for contract number C09020 with Gonzalez Construction, and this is for the car wash itself. The amount that is being requested for additional contract modification authority is $790,000. And that would increase the current CMA from $881,674 to $1,671,674.
Okay. Question I have in a conversation that I've had in the last couple of days with John Fenton over Metrolink, they're having some issues in replacing their car wash. Is there a way, possibly, in this particular situation that the two agencies could work together on a replacement project instead of having two different washes? I mean, I don't know where this is located. I'm just asking. I mean, it's a very distinct possibility because they're trying to they're going to have to go through a total replacement kind of a situation, they're working on that right now. I mean, and the reason I ask is this conversation just taking place within the last day or so.
I don't know. We can take a look at what the car dimensions are. Obviously, the subway is electric with third rail. The Metrolink trains are diesel. I don't know if there's a non-revenue connection between their.
I don't know either, but maybe
look at it.
At least talk to them since they're in the same building, probably just up or down a floor or two.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll set up a meeting very soon, sir.
All right, with that, You move the item, Mr. Wilson?
So moved.
And Cheryl, second, without objection, so ordered. Item 32, as I said, will go to the full board. Item 33.
Okay, item number 33 is for the Green Line Maintenance Facility. The action is to approve the use of design, build, contracting, delivery approach. And under CPUC 130242B, the NPA board must approve the use of the design, build, contracting, delivery approach. And so, therefore, we are requesting the board's approval for the design and construction of the storage building at the Mitchell Green Line Maintenance Facility and to solicit and award a design, build, contract.
Okay. Are there any questions? Okay. Not, Chair, I move the recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Without objection, so ordered. Item 34.
Item number 34 is for the I-405 Sepulveda Pass Improvements Project, and the action is to authorize contract modification. And Mike Barber, the project manager, is not here, so I will give the presentation. Essentially what this is that there at the Mulholland Bridge, which is being demolished, there are some power conduits that run through the existing bridge on the north side of the bridge. And so in the restoration of the bridge, DWP approached us and asked us to add 16 additional 6-inch diameter power conduits to provide service. So this is basically an upgrade that will provide more service to the area. And we feel that this is a good time to do it. And so the DWP asked that we get a proposal from our design-build contractor. And at this point in time, because it's design-build, it is only an estimate and is subject to negotiations. But the estimate amount is $1,733,163, and LADWP would be directly involved in negotiations with our contractor, and this would be a betterment, and the value in the board item right now is an amount not to exceed $1.633 million. So we would just like to get the board's approval to start the negotiations because of the board cycle and not being able to come back to the board again until January. We would like to get the board's approval so that we can start negotiations and we can conclude the contract modifications so we can expedite the work. And this is totally reimbursable from the City of L.A., LADWP.
Okay, any questions?
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Morey. How does this impact your budget overall for this project? Is it within the contingency allowance or...
Well, the board does approve a life of project budget, and there are contingencies within it. Now, this is a different in nature because it is a betterment. So these are funds that would be coming from another source. So it doesn't really, let's say, change life of project because, you know, in that regard, because the money is coming from additional funding sources.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moved. Chair, I'll second. Without objection. It's ordered. Next is item 35, which is my motion that I set the board as direct CEO to include this Westchester Manchester Aviation Station at Greater near Hendry. We have some speakers, but I'd like to put my motion out and give it to my colleagues here. Obviously, there's a number of issues. This particular station was in the planning process, project definition at one particular point in time. At the time that we removed this option, it was somewhat premature, I believe. Now, there were some issues with it early on, but now the community supports this station. The maintenance facility site has been removed. And we conducted these workshop sessions back in the spring and summer of 2010, and members of the community came out very strongly in their area, but we really didn't deal with the issue, even though there was a lot of public comment in favor. The at-grade station is affordable now, and the future benefits outweigh the cost of trying to environmentally clear and construct the project in the future. Ridership is projected to increase dramatically. There's issues of low ridership, but even lower ridership station is already in the plan. I think the best deal with this, if it's an option, to do it through the construction bid process, which is a much more effective way, public dollars. The way the CATS motion that we brought forward in May to explore this with the Lehmer Park Vernon Station, and it should be done for Westchester as well. And in my motion, I'm not trying to supersede or create priorities, but I just think it would be a good use of public dollars at this particular point to at least look at that option. And I'm going to... I'll read in my motion at this point the amendment. The Westchester community and the city of Los Angeles would benefit greatly from a rail transit station at Manchester Aviation for the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor project. And last month, the board heard from community leaders that a station is desired and needed. An at-grade station alternative near Hendry has been environmentally cleared and should be advanced in the Crenshaw LAX Transit project's design and construction RFP. In a manner similar to but not competing with the Vernon Lehmer Park station, and in order to not preclude a station in Westchester if that station can be designed and constructed within the project budget. So I think it's appropriate at this time to advance the concept of this station by taking this important step toward making it reality. So I would move that the MTA Board of Directors direct the CEO to, one, include the Westchester-Manchester Aviation Station at grade near Hendry as a bid option during construction procurement. In other words, bidders will propose prices for the following additional option. In addition to the three options identified as 1A, 1B, and 1C that were adopted by the MTA board back on May 26th, and establish a clear pecking order for additional option below that the first priority is the Lehmer Park Vernon Underground Station, with second priority to the Manchester Aviation Station at grade near Hendry. A, that the baseline project plus the Lehmer Park Vernon Underground Station and Manchester Aviation Station at grade. And two, recommend that the MTA Board approve a design build contract for options 2A, 2B that were adopted by the MTA Board for item 1 on May 26th. And include the following additional option for consideration. A, option 1A, as described in this motion, if a responsible and responsive bid is received that is less or equal to the adopted life of project budget. And three, authorize a contract modification in the amount of $300,000, plus $250,000 to complete the additional design and engineering work needed for the project to prepare this option for construction procurement that is within the adopted life of project budget. That is my motion. Got a second. We have a number of speakers, and then we'll ask staff to address some issues. Robert Schertz, I think, believe it is, followed by Judy Citrin, by Lori Erlendison. Of course, three speakers.
Hi. I think that if you look at this project, the ridership is expected to be low, and the reason for this station is an inexpensive way to add a significant number of riders to this project. But I live in the community, and I think this will be great for the community. It'll help improve the neighborhood, and I hope to be able to board the train. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Judy, and then Lori.
I'm a Westchester resident who lives only a few blocks from the Crenshaw LAX line and the future Hendry station. When my neighborhood first heard about the project, we were told that there might be a maintenance yard built there and that would block off Hendry, which is one of the main entrances and exits to our neighborhood. I actually know the woman who started organizing in opposition to the maintenance yard, and what she did is she urged everybody to write in opposing the train, period. At that time, you could say train, bus, or nothing. She told them to write nothing. Well, now that the people know the train is coming, they want to be able to get on it. We're going to bear the brunt of the construction and the train running literally a block from our neighborhood. We should be able to get on it. If there's no station there, there'll be a gap of over three and a half miles where nobody will be able to get on the train, and we feel that we should be able to get on the train. Thank you.
Lori, and then followed by Egert Sainz and Danny Schneider and William Roberts.
Move it to short for short people. Hi, I lived in Los Angeles all my life and Westchester for 43 years. Grew up in the days of the red car and took buses everywhere when I was a teenager. Been to London and used the tube and Sydney, Australia and New York City, and just have been delighted with how easy it is to get around those cities. Would love to have a stop for this train in Westchester to get to cultural events, get around the city, reduce pollution so I'm not driving everywhere, not paying for parking everywhere, not fighting traffic. Really looking forward to having this. I hope it happens when I'm still around, but I certainly want it for the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Edgar?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Egert Sainz, and I'm here on behalf of Westchester Vitalization Corp. And Westchester Vitalization enthusiastically supports this motion, and I would like to thank the supervisor for bringing this motion. It'll mean a lot to Westchester residents to be able to board a train to take it to Staples, to the new NFL stadium, to cultural events, to the Dorothy Chandler, to go to the courthouse, even to come to MTA board meetings, and to give an alternative to car transportation. A word about Vitalization. We are a 30-year-old 501c3. We're chartered by the City of Los Angeles, a 20-member board consisting of business leaders in Westchester, and our mission is the promotion and growth of the business community. And we believe this will be not only good for residents, but good for the restaurants, the retail, and the playhouse that would be within walking distance of the proposed station. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Danny, followed by William Roberts, followed by John Walsh.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for raising this. Denny Schneider, I can tell you this is nonpartisan. We have the Democratic motions. We have the Republican motions. We have the Westchester Neighbors Association. All the different groups are coming forward on this. Bottom line was, when the train was first raised to us, there were some people who did not like what was being presented. We actually presented an alternative that, rather than saying no, that was interpreted as being no. We've been continually coming out in favor of the train, and we will continue to do so. And I want to thank you again for raising this so that we could have a station. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Roberts, followed by John Walsh.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is William Roberts. I'm the Vice President of the Westchester Democratic Club. And as Mr. Schneider said, this is a bipartisan effort from members of our community in support of the chairman's motion. We heartily support having an at-grade station at the Hendry location. And as evidenced by the things that Mr. Sainz said, it would bring added benefit to businesses in the Westchester community, as well as give Westchester community residents the opportunity to board the train that comes through their neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh?
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. We're all in favor of the Hendry station. Anything that disperses the gangs into your neighborhood, we're in favor of. I live a block from the Hollywood Vine station. One stabbing unsolved. Halloween, two stabbings at the Western station. They're bringing crime. I'm talking about the gangs. You know, the gangs don't want to hang out in my neighborhood. They want to hang out in white neighborhoods like your neighborhood. So they're saying, and what's the ridership? 300,000 boardings was, by the year 2000 on the Red Line, was the prediction. Today it's 150,000, 11 years late. And I'm telling you, people are going to be killed in your neighborhood. When the train slows down, it's even more dangerous around the station. But don't worry, these are all the real estate people, and they will make a killing out of it. And remember, the ridership, unlike other cities, is 90% poor minorities. Your maids will use it. Racist.
Thank you for your kind, positive comments about transportation.
Like a cancer surgeon, very negative.
Okay. Good mumbling, John. We got you. Okay. The items before us. Staff want to make any comments? If not, we can.
I'd like to ask.
Yeah, sure.
Some questions.
Has any of you taken a look at this proposal? And can you tell us what impact it will have on the life of project for the Crenshaw line?
Introduce
yes. I'm Rob Ball of the project manager for.
You turn your mic.
Mic's on.
Microphone.
Sorry. The estimated cost of the station, shown in the environmental document, was about 1.6.
Just make it closer.
The better?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'm Rob Ball, the project manager for construction on this project. The estimated cost of the at-grade station without parking is about $11.6 million. With parking, the cost would go up to about $15 million. We have not done any engineering in this project. If we actually do move forward this motion, we'd have to accelerate the engineering to put it into the procurement documents for release next year.
So what was the projected cost again?
It's anywhere from, say, $12 to $15 million, depending on if we actually add parking there or not.
And that's with or without parking?
It's about $12 million without parking. It would be about $15 million with parking. 1.5.
Okay, and there's adequate land to accommodate parking there?
No, there would be some property we'd have to acquire to provide parking in this location.
And what impact does this have on the other proposals that we have on this alignment? There's, I think, a study going on now with respect to the bidding process for Vernon LeMert Park Station. Does this have any impact on that?
We are actually already working on a bid option for the Merck Park Station. This would be another bid option we would put into our procurement documents. The time frame is fine. We actually could work it within the time frame we have to put out the procurement documents.
In my motion, you saw Park, that would be the priority number one, and this would be number two. A question? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to go to the board without objection. So ordered. Thank you. Item. Let's see. Do we have item 36? Well, let's go back. Can you wait for a second here, and we'll go back to the top, and we'll start with the transit project delivery report. Item number 28.
Okay, I'm going to begin with the I-405 Sepulveda Pass Improvement Project, and as you can see from the slide, there are a number of significant issues, but the ones that you see are primarily related to right-of-way and utility relocation work. This is a 10-mile, $1 billion project, and it's a design-build project, so you know, starting from the top, the board has already approved the funding for the Getty work around the Getty entrance work, so we're going to start to implement that work by unilateral change order, and in the process of doing that, we'll also finalize cost negotiations with the contractor. Now, the next two to three items are related in that the project has to acquire the real estate on either side of the freeway. To the west is the VA hospital, and to the east is the GSA federal building property. So there are easements and licenses required to complete the work. So currently, the schedule is showing about a 3.5-month delay, and we are continuing to work with the contractor, design builder Kiewit, to bring this back to the May 31st, 2013 schedule. And in addition to that, there's utility work that is also in a critical path of the contract schedule. And the fortunate thing is that there's been a lot of cooperation, particularly in working with the utility owners and the City of Los Angeles to try to resolve some of these issues, to do construction workarounds and to expedite certain portions of the work to maintain the schedule. We are also working to finalize utility relocation cost, and those costs will result in change notices. And if those costs come to a certain dollar amount, they will be brought to the board for approval. There's also a work that involves Caltrans and the Giro lawsuit, and that's regarding another easement that has to do with private development. And so that could also become a potential problem for cost and the schedule for the project. And then finally, this is something that you're well aware of recently. There's a lot of work being done on Sepulveda Boulevard next to the freeway. And so we're working with the Caltrans, LADOT, and the contractor to ensure that the traffic impacts are mitigated as much as possible to reduce the impacts to the community.
Are the two projects in sync with each other? I mean, I was just asking Art, you know, why we wind up having these two projects at the same time, and we've got enough congestion on the one side, on the Sepulveda side.
Sepulveda and the 405.
Well, Sepulveda and the 405, there are on ramps, so the there has to be a lot of traffic workaround plans to build the new on and on ramps. So Sepulveda is the main north south artery that is directly adjacent to the 405 freeway.
Right.
Okay.
What's the reality of trying to pick up 3.5 months? Is that real?
You know, Mike Barber, the project manager, is not here, but I guess in my experience, particularly if you have a lot of cooperation between the, let's say, the city and Caltrans, because it also has to do with traffic and hours and so forth. And of course, we've talked a little bit about the property issues up there. It's just going to take an awful lot of due diligence to immediately start to attack some of these issues. So the things that we've listed up on the screen are really a lot of things that have to do with property owners and coordination work with third parties. So I think Mike Barber has some contingency in his schedule, but some of these things, I'm sure he didn't really think that they would come to this point and not being resolved. So I think it's a long enough schedule. I believe that there's still some time where if everybody applies themselves, they can probably reduce some of that time.
Okay.
Are you done with this slide?
Yes, sir.
I have a question. There were some rumors that at some point you may have to close Wilshire. Is that correct?
Well, Mike Barber is not here, and I don't know if we have anybody from the city or Caltrans that can respond to that, but we will certainly get that answer to you soon, sir. Okay.
No one has the answer now?
There's quite a bit of work that's going to be taking place on Wilshire. We're doing some direct flyovers, and there is a possibility that portions of it will be closed. It's just a matter of staging the construction.
You know when that will take place? Which month that will? Can someone get that back to us?
Yes, sir. We have our community relations people too that are involved, so we'll make sure that we get information to you.
Which people are those?
Our community relations people too. Okay.
Well, Linda's right there. She's
yes.
Sitting right behind you.
Yes,
she's being quiet though.
Okay. All right. So we'll try to get.
Why don't you come up to the microphone?
That one. Okay.
The question is regarding Wilshire?
Correct.
I don't have all the details. I can bring Yvette Rapoz down here, who is involved in the day-to-day planning on this. Would you like me to do that?
Would you do that, and we can
certainly
go
will.
Back
thank
to
you.
That
okay.
After this report is complete. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Yeah, Dennis, is Mike Barber in the building? Why don't you try to reach him and ask him to come down?
Okay, sure.
Mr. Chair, I think it would make it time efficient for us all. I mean, we're all busy people to have the appropriate staff down here to answer these kinds of questions. That way, we don't have to delay our time here. I mean, I know we like being around here, but.
So if I may, I'll move on to the Metro Orange Line Extension.
Thank you.
Okay, so the Metro Orange Line Extension is a four-mile project, $260 million. And the schedule to open the line is, the BRT line is in the summer of next year. Some of the photos that we show on a monthly basis have a lot to do with the placement of the busway pavement. and a lot of the utility relocation work. And fortunately, because there's been a lot of cooperation between LADWP and the MTA, the contractor has been able to get a lot of work done. There have been meetings that have been facilitated by the mayor's office and the council office, and so a lot of the city forces are really working closely with us to keep the work flowing smoothly.
Ms. Murray, before you move on, I didn't hear a definitive time that you have for actually opening this extension. Can you give us a month?
Yes, sir. Well, we are looking at towards the end of the summer of 2012, so we are on schedule to meet that date. And
let me just clarify this, because you know, in my mind, the summer may be in August. In your mind, is it in June? Is it in May? You know, to say towards the end of the summer doesn't give me any really clear answer.
Yes, sir. My name is Hitesh Patel. I'm the project manager. We are currently evaluating the risks that remains on the project. Significant risk that we currently have is the DWP relocations. We're working closely with DWP, trying to get schedule of their work, and there are major relocations yet to be completed. So we're evaluating that, and I think we'll be able to gauge better a month in summer for opening, you know, in the coming month, I would say.
Is this the timeline that you originally projected when you started this project?
Yes, sir.
It was scheduled to open it. Which month did you schedule it?
Well, we've been projecting summer 2012.
So somewhere 2012 could mean December, November?
No, I think it's going to be July, August.
Okay. You know, what I'm kind of concerned with is that this doesn't seem to be like a high-risk project to me. I mean, I would think that a tunneling project is high risk. And I've driven this alignment, and you know, I don't know all the details with respect to the utilities, but if I compare this to a tunnel, this is a very low risk. And this may be comparable to a freeway widening or carpool lane or something like that in my mind. And so in the previous slide, Mr. Moore, you talked about catching up on 3.5 months, so I'm kind of concerned about your thought process. If you think that you can catch up on 3.5 months on that project on 405, and this project being one that I would deem to be not that risky, why we can't be more definitive and get this project done sooner than later?
Well, I think the goal would be to finish sooner than later, and we've just provided that window. If you recall, on the original Orange Line project, we had an earlier operations date planned, and when we started to announce it to try to get it open earlier, but there were some issues that you know that came up with utilities and other things that were out of our control. So when we made our presentation, or started our presentation, what I was trying to say is that we have a schedule to open in the summer, and we would, you know, if we can open earlier, we would we'd report to the board on our progress on a monthly basis to tell you if it's achievable.
Mr. Chair, I don't mean to belabor this, but I'm just trying to get a – I guess this is overall, in my view, a system kind of an issue. At the beginning of this project, I think someone went out and did some engineering.
Excuse me, sir.
At the beginning of this project, someone went out and did some engineering.
Yes, sir. And this is also a design-build contract, so additional engineering was done after the award of the contract.
Right. And so this gentleman here, and I've forgotten your name, sir, so forgive me, but I thought I heard you say there were some unforeseen things that happened with utilities. Now, I'm just trying to understand if we did the work, if we did the engineering and we did the planning and the design, why are we having unforeseen things happening on a project that is such a low-risk kind of a project? This is a bus transitway, not a freeway, not a subway, not a light rail. So I'm just trying to understand how we think in on a system-wide basis with how we're getting our plans tight enough so that we can stay on track and also stay on budget. And you're saying that we're all on track, but the window that you gave me was end of the summer.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify. Even though it may appear that this is a simpler project, there are a lot of challenges. We have major third-party issues. We had to, you know, we had a complicated bridge structure over Union Pacific that required extensive coordination agreements. So there are a lot of complicated parts to this project. One of the complication is the DWP relocations. These relocations were foreseen. They're not. It's not that they were not foreseen. They are. Unfortunately, DWP resources are limited. They are working on other projects, and we are doing as best we can working with DWP to fit our relocations that's necessary to complete our project. They have been there are significant delays by DWP. The relocation should have been completed earlier on. Unfortunately, we're still going through the relocation process as we speak. So what we are doing as a project from MTA is to do workarounds and work with the city to come up with different worksite traffic control plans that allows the contractors to continue to work with the DWP poles in the way. And also we're working with the mayor's office and the council office to look at some of the work that can also be eliminated potentially that's not required for the project. And so we're doing as best we can to mitigate these delays. We will, I think we can. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee a month, and I think we're getting closer with the DWP relocations that in a month or two, definitely we'll be able to come back and give you a firmer date.
So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the two things I thought I heard you say, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, the delays were caused, one, by DWP and their lack of responsiveness in a timely fashion, and two, that there was a bridge that was a bit more complicated than you foresaw. But is that what I heard you say?
Go ahead.
Yes. Maury, did you want to speak on his behalf?
Yes, sir. On the history of this project, there were earlier attempts to get even going to the community to see if we could come up with other means of relocating the power lines. And these are overhead power lines, and there's ultimately the community wanted the power lines to go underground, so that complicated the work. But we did make a presentation to the board earlier in the project to see what we could do to simplify the work. With regards to the city of L.A., the city of L.A. has limited workforce, and when they are able to work with us, they do a fine job. But right now, you know, there are a lot of projects that we are working on, and we are working with the mayor's office and his various department heads to try to allocate resources. Crenshaw is going to run into a similar situation when they go into construction because there is only a limited amount of LADBP workforce. And they do not subcontract the work to consultants because of their union. So I think systemically, we really need to find a way to get more labor committed to our projects because it's not for lack of trying. I mean, they do a very good job when they do work for us, but there's just not as many of them as we would need.
Would you, if you were to assess the relative risk factors and difficulties in a project, how would you rate a bus transit way compared to a light rail, compared to an area where you're going underground? Who would get the highest risk?
Well, sir, I mean, it's far less risk, obviously, but even with the original Orange Line, because we were building a long, dedicated rail right-of-way that had been abandoned, there was contaminated soil. There are a lot of utilities that we had to relocate that were not in the as-built drawings or provided by the utility companies. So that is the nature of design-build work. And what Mr. Patel has been doing is he's been trying to work with the city, because they perform a lot of this work, to find those utilities and come up with plans to try to get enough resources there in time so it doesn't impact the other portions of the work. And that's the nature of design-build contracting, sir.
So would it have been easier to do if we had gotten more details early on?
Yes, sir. And we attempted to do that, but again, this is abandoned right-of-way. It was a railroad right-of-way. There are a lot of intersections. There were utilities that were not mapped. As you know, in the valley, they have water pipes that are breaking out there, and the city is having a hard time locating those. So this is a nature design-build work.
So are you saying design-build work is inherently more risky than non-design-build work? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, sir. I mean, in terms of the philosophy is that you place the risk on the contractor, but as a public agency and a transit provider, ultimately it's our responsibility to make sure that the projects are managed properly and we're delivered on time. So you can't put all the risk on the contractor because we are the ones responsible for delivering the projects.
So how could we have done this better?
Well, on Supervisor Molina's project, for example, we used a hybrid contracting method of doing design, bid, build for a portion of the work where we needed to control the risk, and we also then we divided the work and gave a portion of a design build so that the contractor could use their ingenuity to come in with a lower price. And Supervisor Molina's project on the east side came in on time, within budget.
And so are we using those lessons learned and that concept in these other projects, i.e. Expo 2, Goal Line Extension, and the other projects that we're building? Are we still doing it the way that we did it here?
Well, specifically for the MTA-managed projects, the FTA has a risk assessment process, and part of that risk assessment is to evaluate contracting delivery methods. So that is something that is inherent to the FTA process, and we are doing that on the Regional Connector and the West Side Subway.
Thank you.
You have any more?
Yes, sir. This is the congestion reduction demonstration project, and this is design, build, operate, and maintain, so it's a little bit more complicated because it also includes maintaining, but fortunately, the as far as the design part of this contract, it's 95% complete. So hopefully a lot of the unknowns are being identified as part of the final design. Again, it involves an awful lot of work between Metro and Caltrans, and so that work is being coordinated between our two agencies. There's a bullet point up there that describes the CIDH pile foundations that's cast in place, drilled hole piles, typical for pile foundation work done on Caltrans projects. And so the only thing that is maybe significant in this part of the presentation is the there's a ponding problem near the HOV travel lanes near the I-110 and I-105. So we're meeting with Caltrans to come up with design to resolve that and to correct the drainage problem, but that will involve a change order to correct the problem. Okay, so in addition to that, there are fiber communication cables that are being installed along the freeway, but the work is progressing as planned.
Are there any DWP or any other city-related issues that could take you off track?
This does go through the city of Los Angeles, and there are a lot of power requirements and on and on ramps and near the Adams overcrossing and so forth. So I'm sure that there are things that could pose problems to us, but again, that's where it comes back to working closely with the city to resolve these issues as soon as possible. Okay, the next slide is on the University City Pedestrian Bridge, and this has been presented to the committee updates on a monthly basis. We are still in negotiations with NBC Universal to complete the revised settlement agreement, and a lot of the terms and conditions have to do more with the work hours to do the construction. So we really can't even come up with a good budget for the construction, and because the nature of the work, it's impacted by Universal City and their entertainment complex, their summer holiday and tourist season. And so it complicates the construction because it requires more workarounds and more inefficiencies in doing the work. So if we can get through the settlement agreement by December, we'll have a better idea of what types of restrictions will be imposed on the contractor.
How long have you been negotiating on this settlement agreement?
Several months, sir. Yes.
Months or years?
Probably, you're going to years, sir.
Yeah.
That's a county. Isn't that a county jurisdiction?
All started with the door. All right. Okay. Next.
Okay. The last report is on the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor project. Just very quickly, I think the most important thing is the board did approve the LIPR project budget for $1.749 billion last month. And we are now trying to get a record decision from the FTA, and we're trying to get it by the end of this month. There are other things that are happening. You're aware of the FAA issues with the LAX trench segment, and that has to be defined and approved within the FAA requirements And the that sort of also ties into the FTA's approval and some of the things that they're looking at. We also have on this project, we have not gone out to bid yet, but we're starting to look at property appraisals. And this is what Rob Ball is doing in the planning department to make sure that we can get identify the properties early so that we do not have right-of-way problems when we award the contract. Some of the things that are happening on the contracting side for this project is that we do have the updated PE drawings that have been issued out for industry review. And we are starting the solicitation process, which will be a two-step process, an RFQ in November and an RFP in January 2012 to try to interest teams that will be proposing on this design-build contract. You've already heard about the Vernon Avenue and Park stations as part of the earlier presentation. And one of the things, too, is that the item that is going to the full board has to do with the approval of the term sheet and conditions for the BNSF track abandonment, and so we are working on that, and that will go to the full board. There are two more presentations, if you would like.
Okay,
sir. The Riesel Connector and the West Side Transit Subway Project are both very similar because they're on a sort of the same time frame and trying to get the environmental documents approved, presented to the board so that both projects can be adopted in the same time frame. We are also working very closely with the FTA to get record of decision on both projects. So both the slides basically say the same thing, is that we are working closely with the FTA to try to get their approval so that the board can adopt both projects within about a month of each other, early part of next year. And in concurrent with that, on the Regional Connector project, we are trying to put together a solicitation package so that we can look at the procurement to begin early construction on the Regional Connector project. And as far as the West Side Subway extension, the only thing that I may add to this is that one of the things that we're doing now that we are the board has approved advanced preliminary engineering is we are working more on risk assessment and looking at the schedule to define the cost. And we're looking at utilities, properties, and construction contracting so that we can define some of the risk early and also look for early construction opportunities. And that ends my presentation.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Back to the regional connector slide. I understand there were some issues with the slope and grade on the Little Tokyo station. Have those things been resolved?
Yes, they're nearing resolution. We want to make sure that we optimize the grade for the coming out of the Little Tokyo station and going towards Union Station so that it meets the criteria, and we're working very closely with operations because it has to operate properly, and we have to make sure that we have the right headways to provide sufficient and efficient operations. So the civil part design is being looked at very closely, and we have some utilities in that intersection, and we are working with the City of Los Angeles to look at a major storm drain that may have to be relocated. So those two issues are being worked concurrently.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions? Next, please.
And I believe that ends my presentation.
Okay.
Brian Boudreau.
That's all your present. Item 28?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we have a public comment on William Roberts.
I'm sorry. They were going to bring staff back who had more knowledge on the 405 on Wilshire closure.
What? Excuse me. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Yvette Repose, Director of Construction Relations.
Good morning.
Your question?
Had to do with the Wilshire Boulevard, and there had been some discussion or conversation about Wilshire having to be closed, either a full closure or a partial closure. So my question has to do with what's your knowledge on that, and when would that occur if it were to occur?
Okay, so currently the work that we have scheduled is the installation of false work under the Wilshire undercrossing, and we will need to close Wilshire Boulevard at nighttime only. We're working with LADOT to have it be a directional closure, which means that Wilshire in the eastbound direction would be closed for two nights from 9 p.m. to about 6 a.m., and then Wilshire in the westbound direction would be closed for two nights from 9 to 6 as well.
What span of Wilshire are we talking about?
We're talking about, I believe it's just a couple blocks north and, a couple blocks from that location where the Wilshire undercrossing is at the 405. Couldn't tell you the cross streets right at this moment.
And when is this likely to occur?
When? November 28th.
Of this year?
Of this year. For those four nights. There will be other closures at Wilshire Boulevard not yet scheduled when we do the demoing of the Wilshire ramps and the construction of the Wilshire loops. That likely won't happen until February of 2012.
Can you keep us posted on that if those days change so that we can at least get our message out as we did with the 405 freeway? I mean, Wilshire is a very impacted corridor. And I know when I ride the 720, it's usually standing room only, and it's and there's lots of cars on there, and we certainly have a lot of bus service on that line, too.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Roberts, you signed up for item 28, public comment. Okay. With that, we'll receive and file and move to item CEO's report. Well, actually, item 51 is the oral report on project budget and schedule status.
Good morning. I'm Brian Boudreau, Executive Director of Program Management. I'd like to quickly go through the budget and schedule status for each of our major transit construction projects. The first slide I'd like to present is just an overview of the schedule for our Measure R projects, which also includes, in this case, the Expo Phase 1 project. We have four of these projects that are already into the construction or design-build construction phase. Another three are within the PE phase. And then we have another six projects that are still going through various stages of advanced planning efforts. Also, I'd like to note that these schedules indicate America Fast Forward funding, so these are our optimal schedules. We received some comments from board staff recently that they'd like to also show some LRTP schedules, which are more of the pay-as-you-go schedules, so we'll, in future reports, we'll try to reflect that information as well. First project, which was discussed previously, is our Orange Line extension, and this, on the schedule side, I know there's a lot of discussion on that, but we're still forecasting that this project will be complete and open for revenue service sometime in the summer of next year. From a budgetary standpoint, a much more positive discussion. We're forecasting a significant underrun on this project. Even with the adjustments that we're recommending, there's still a fairly healthy contingency that would be available for completion of this project.
Mr. Boudreau, can you tell us what the contingency was on this project?
When this project was originally established, we had a roughly, I believe it was between 10 and 12% contingency at the time we started. We received a very favorable bid for the project, which actually increased the amount of contingency that was available to us. So we were holding on to that pending any risks that may have come up. We've now quantified what we think are the remaining risks on the project, and we're now comfortable with at least forecasting that there would be an underrun. And we would come back to the board and request a formal reduction in the project budget at a later time. Next project, Crenshaw LAX. The only change from last month's presentation is we now have a new life of project budget for this project per the board adoption of the budget last month. It's now $1,749 million, which we'll now be tracking against for the life of this project. Forecast completion is still 2018. West Side Subway Extension, no change from last month's report. We're still at $5.3 million. With the revenue operations date of 2022. We're still working with FTA and reviewing the cost estimates that have been made available to them. So at some point in the future, we'll be coming back with some information on what those cost estimates will show on this project. Likewise, with the regional connector, this project's also going through the federal New Starts process. So we're working through that whole effort and steps that FTA requires. But at this stage of the project development, we're still forecasting a $1.4 billion project budget and a revenue operations date of 2019, assuming America Fast Forward funding. And then for this project, we're expecting a record of decision in early next year, likewise with the West Side Extension. And both the West Side and the Regional Connector, we're hoping to enter into final design sometime in the summer of 2012 as well. Next, we'll go into the status of the Construction Authority projects. First one I'd like to touch upon is the Gold Line Foothill Extension, Phase 2A. There hasn't been a change in the budget or the schedule on this project since our last report. We're still forecasting an increase in the project budget in order to accommodate additional contingency funds. And then from a schedule perspective, we're still forecasting 2016. Chris Myrna, the project director, is here, and he'll make a brief presentation on the status of the project.
Thank you and good morning. A significant achievement in the project occurred earlier this month. We issued the interim notice to proceed to the alignment contractor. That was made possible by the action of the Metro Board amending our funding agreement. We greatly appreciate that. We also need to acquire 50% of the maintenance facility property prior to release of the full funding and issuance of the full NTP. That is related to a case that's being heard by the California Supreme Court. There was a hearing held, I believe, last week, and that is moving forward. We hope a decision will be issued by that court by the middle of January. Some very good news for the project. We won our CEQA challenge of the SEIR. It was the SEIR added the maintenance facility to the project. It was challenged by a property owner, and we were fortunate enough to be victorious in that case. Of course, it can be appealed, and that may occur. The I-210 bridge construction is moving along well. We received approval from Caltrans for the final design. There are a few more minor elements left, some architectural elements left to be approved, but we expect that to happen soon. We've completed the foundations for the west abutment, and we began work on the foundations for the east abutment. The design builder is reporting a 20-day delay on that project. However, there is a five-and-a-half-month amount of float between when that project needs to be done and we need to turn it over to the follow-on project, so that should have no impact on the overall project schedule. We also obtained several permits for the project, the 401 from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the 404 from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and the 1602 permit from the California Department of Fish and Game. With obtaining those three permits, that will significantly reduce some risk associated with that on the project. So that concludes the presentation, unless there are any questions.
Any questions on the goal line? Yes.
So with the CEQA challenge denied, any other litigation on this one line?
Yes, there. The one property owner, he owns about 4 acres of a 24-acre site that we need to acquire for the maintenance facility, has filed somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 lawsuits against the construction authority, the city of Monrovia, in which the property is located. We've been successful in three or so of those cases. We've been very successful in dealing with this litigation. He has tried other tactics as well, aside from litigation, that we've been successful in that as well. He has challenged our right to do design build. We believe that there is, that challenge is absolutely meritless, and we are, prepared to defend that as well.
Do you feel good about moving forward with the litigation and will be successful in those?
Right now, knowing everything that we do, yes we do. And we have there's an eminent domain case that we have against this property owner, and the hearing for that is November 22nd. And so we're hopeful that we will obtain that property through eminent domain in the near future.
Great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Weiser, do you have any further questions?
No.
Okay. Anyone else? If not, thank you.
Next project I'd like to address is Exposition Phase 1. Eric Olson, Project Director for Expo, is here to provide some comments as well. Just quickly, the budget, the current budget for this project is $932 million. We're forecasting about a $3.3 million increase in the budget at this point in time, which may be offset to some degree by some third-party reimbursable amounts. And then from a schedule perspective, the revenue operations date is still, they're still shooting for December or January of this year, or January of next year. It appears as time moves on that perhaps January may be more likely, but I'll let Eric address that a little bit more. And then for the the full segment all the way to Culver City, we're still forecasting early 2012.
What month?
We're looking to be substantially complete out to Culver City in about April of 2012.
That means it's operational, right?
That means it's ready to turn over to Metro so they can begin their operations on the alignment. So they would run, it really is up to Metro, they would run some sort of simulated service for a period of time before they would open up to the public.
Thank you.
Our latest evaluation of our contractor schedule, we're looking at substantial completion for the segment from 7th and Metro to La Cienega next month, December 2011. We were able to turn the system over to Metro, the segment between the 23rd Street Station, which is out in front of Los Angeles Trade Tech, to La Cienega the week of October 17th. So Metro has had their trains and operators out there getting familiar with the alignment while we complete the work at the junction. We are hopeful that we will be able to turn the full system over to Metro here in the next week or two so they can begin full pre-revenue operations. And by doing that, a December date with the holidays in place might be difficult to achieve, but we do believe that a January 2012 ROD date is still viable. The other remaining elements of the work, as we talked about before, is early 2012 for that. As Brian said, we're still forecasting a $3.3 million overrun, but we're looking to balance that out against third-party reimbursable costs of $4 million and other potential cost savings of about $1 million.
That is that in regards to the negotiations with the contractor, that last piece? The last piece?
The remaining work?
I mean, is that
no, we've got all that under contract.
Okay.
All the work out to Culver City is all under contract now.
Okay.
And it's a different contractor. Last meeting, we were asked to come back with some lessons learned from Expo Phase 1. We put together a draft white paper that we are, I think, was circulated, and we're still in the process of finalizing. We looked at a number of topics to incorporate into Phase 2 from the lessons learned on Phase 1. One was establishing the budget after preliminary engineering. On Phase 1, it was set during conceptual engineering. We want to make sure that we have an appropriate level of contingency in the project costs, again, being consistent with the Metro policy that's now in place. We have the 15% for Phase 2. We also want to make sure there's an appropriate amount of schedule contingency, again, consistent with the Metro policy. We have 20% schedule contingency in the Phase 2 schedule. We developed a procurement approach that allowed for price competitiveness, but at the same time, we were able to select a contractor with experience doing light rail work in dense urban environments. So we think we have a contractor that's very familiar with this type of work on board with us now. We have a fixed price from our contractor before the award of the contract. On Phase 1, it was done in a package way, so we did not have a guaranteed maximum price once the contract was awarded. Added scope and betterments. We're going to track outside the baseline budget. So the baseline budget that was established for that firm's scope will be tracked, as well as any betterments or enhancements that are added to the project. We'll track those below that line. And then we want to make sure we establish an appropriate budget for third-party costs and proactively manage that budget. Third-party costs on phase one were significantly greater than the budget, so we wanted to make sure that we have adequate budget to allow for our third parties to do the review and oversight that they need to do. And again, we're finalizing the white paper and should have that back out in a couple of weeks.
Did you say that the third-party budget exceeded the original or the regular budget? Is that what I heard you say?
It exceeded. The third-party costs exceeded what we had budgeted in the Phase 1 budget, yes.
The amount that they had budgeted.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, if not.
Okay, the last project we want to talk about this morning is Exposition Phase 2. No new issues to report on this project. We're still forecasting a budget of $1.5 billion and a revenue operations date of 2015. And again, Eric will discuss some of the recent activities on the project.
Recent activities that have occurred, the location, the preferred concept for the maintenance facility in Santa Monica was selected, so we're now moving forward full-scale preliminary engineering. The grade crossing applications on the project were on the agenda, the November 10th agenda for the CPUC, and I'm happy to report that the crossings were approved. So that's a big milestone on this project. Again, we had a number of CPUC issues on phase one, so this is a big hurdle to overcome. Balfour Beatty, who's the contractor for the Venice Boulevard Bridge, is now advancing the design to the 100% level so we can start the work there. That's the bridge that comes off of the Culver City Station, so it's one of the first elements of work on Phase 2. Briefs have been filed by both parties for the appeal by Neighbors for Smart Rail on the court ruling on our Phase 2 environmental documents, so that process continues to move forward. Our main guideway contractor, Skanska Rados, continues to advance the design of the 60% level. In fact, we've gotten a number of design submittals from the contractor. And we've completed field activities for our structural analysis of a large storm drain that runs down Colorado Boulevard in Santa Monica called the Kenter Canyon storm drain that we're evaluating what, if any, modifications or protections we're going to have to do to that storm drain. So we should have information on that in the next month or two. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay. Any questions at this particular point? If not, Mr. Walsh signed up to speak on item 51. Thank you.
$3.3 million projected over current budget. Well, you know, when they have to file the report with the state and the federal government, that's where all the facts are. Get a copy of the PMOC, and you'll find out what this project is, all these projects, over the initial budget. And I just want you to remember, and Don Canabi remembers 20 years ago when I was talking about when you had a bridge collapse during construction on the Blue Line. The Blue Line was done. You know how much the Blue Line cost? $40 million a mile, and they completed it. That was $40 million a mile. Now you're talking about projects, light rail projects, three and four times as much, and that's all fat. And I'd just like to point out the reason you don't see our friend here is, here's his picture, Arnold Sachs, on the front page of the Daily News. I believe he's arrested down in Long Beach, wasn't he?
Mr. Leahy, do you have anything to add?
Yes, sir. I want to just let you know that we're monitoring the high-speed rail project. There's been some discussion about reallocating money from the regional connector to the high-speed rail project, and obviously we'll bring that to the board's attention. The project team for the High Desert Corridor will be meeting in Yano on Thursday next to talk about the results of their alternatives analysis with the cities up in that part of the county. We had a meeting the other day with 160 folks out in the Van Nuys Rapid Way workshops. We met the other day with the new San Fernando Valley COG directors, Nigerian Katz, Yaroslavsky participated. In the last two Saturdays, the Crenshaw Leadership Council has met over in L.A. and Inglewood to discuss the project. I will conclude my report with that. Thank you.
Okay. Not any director's items? If not, then we have one public comment. Mr. Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at Walsh Confidential. Alexa World Global Rankings, you can get it. Our ranking of the top 10 million websites is 434,955 of the top 10 million websites. Arnold Sachs, there's his picture right there on today's Daily News. And I'd like to point out that I am on your side. If the regional connector, you know, it's a boondoggle, but at the end it'll have some utility. There will be some utility about the, but the high-speed rail is the satanic majesty of the rail madness. And when I brought this up, I said, what, this is a white man's thing. And what they said at City Council, the guy said, Ed Reyes said, well, what good is it? He said, it will help you make day trips to the ballet in San Francisco. That's what was said at City Council. No money for $100 billion for that madness.
All right, there being no other public comments, this meeting adjourned. Thank you.